Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. This is where we celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination, which are sometimes underrated in modern society, but can be extraordinary tools to live more deeply and have access to worlds beyond the obvious one. I'm very excited to have as our guest today Dr. Alberto Fragasso. He's calling us from Italy. He is an anthropologist of dreams. He's a dreamer and a very prolific and gifted dreamer, a teacher, transpersonal counselor, traditional healer. He has researched cultural, medical, and religious anthropology. He's explored many, many disciplines for expanding consciousness, conscious breathing, pranayama, vipassana meditation, and so on. And he's published several books in Italian, one of whose titles means The Way of the Dreamer, Via del Sognatore. I'm not going to beat him up for using a title that I started using for my work 40 years ago. I'm delighted to see it in Italian, too. That was the original title of my first book on all of this, Conscious Dreaming, and I've used it for this show and for other things for a while. But Alberto's welcome. So Via del Sognatore in Italian. He's done other books, The Touch of the Shaman, Il Tocco dello Sciamano, Dreamwalking, and so on. Well, Alberto, it's a delight to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Robert, for the invitation. I feel deeply honored to be here, and I am both happy and excited. I only hope I don't get carried away by the emotions. I truly want to be of service to this podcast, bringing my love for dreaming and for the call of the dream world, which I believe is something that unites all the dreamers. And by the way, I'm wearing a beautiful T-shirt with a bear that is carrying a paper sticker in which is written free hugs. So I'm here for bringing love for dreams.
Well, the bear is always welcome. If you're not careful, you'll have me singing the bear song in a moment. Maybe we'll both be doing it. That could possibly happen, you know. I love your passion for all of this. Your passion is infectious. It touches other people, which is why you're a wonderful teacher, conveying to others through your energy and your emotions, as well as through your brilliant mind, what all of this is about. Unlike me, you love stories. I think we agree that a story is probably the shortest way of getting to the truth of things and the best way to carry it. The kinds of healers and shamans who interest me in life, Alberto, are essentially storytellers and story makers. They change things. They improve the health of body and mind and spirit by creating a better story, helping someone else to find a better story and live that story. So I'd like to start by inviting you to share a couple of stories from your own life which involve dreams. You told me that it was a dream that first brought you to me, and you told me about a dream from your youth, which was a life-changing dream way back then. So let's start with you talking to us about your oneiric autobiography, the role of dreams at turning points in your life.
Okay. As an anthropologist, what I have observed is that there are different schools of thought. Some tend toward a very left-brain, rational approach, one that often leaves little room for invisible dimension of experiences. Others are more open-minded and willing to engage with realities that transcend the conventional framework. One of the challenges within academia is the difficulty of embracing alternative ontologies. Fortunately, many indigenous traditions preserve a way of understanding reality that are far broader than our dominant paradigms. and anthropologists such as those you often speak about have helped open important doors, and they have shown us that there are other worlds, other dimensions of experience that are usually ignored or dismissed, but us as dreamers, we know that is true. And in my view, culture is not simply something created by human beings alone. Rather, human beings dynamically generate culture through their relationships with one another, with dreams, with spirits, with the invisible worlds. It is a transpersonal co-creation. And we might even speak of a kind of transpersonal anthropology, though that becomes more complex because it asks people to consider that the revelation they receive in dreams may be real encounters rather than merely symbolic material to be interpreted through a Freudian lens. And for me, the anthropology of dreaming is an extraordinary journey through culture. It's a story. It is an opportunity to awaken what's accumulation of information of buried beneath the surface. It allows us to descend into the deeper layers of a culture and discover the archetypal forces that shape social and cultural dynamics. It is also a journey into ourselves, into our humanity, and into our possibility. Both the archaeology and anthropology of dreaming allow us to dig deeply and uncover something profoundly meaningful about who we are. And I have a little story that came to me from dreams. I decided to title it The Dream of Supermarket and Landfill. Recently, I had a dream in which I was talking with a close friend with studying anthropology too. We were inside a supermarket playing tennis in one of the aisles. It was less like a tennis and more like a game of volleying ideas back and forth, exchanging thoughts through serves and returns. And suddenly, the scene dissolved, and I found myself inhabiting the body of a young African girl, perhaps between 11 and 15 years old. She had the dreadlocks, braids, and beads woven into her hair. And her hands, she carried a tool used to search beneath the earth for hidden objects. I was standing in a landfill searching for important images buried beneath plastic and debris. The images I was seeking were archetypal images, the fundamental images of humanity. More specifically, I was searching for images of the mother, the great mother, and those primordial figures connected to the origin of human existence. And in the dream, I realized how much of modern life is immersed in an intensive production of images. Social media images, for example, last only a few seconds before disappearing. Archetypal images, by contrast, are thousands of years old. Images such as those found in the Tarot, for example, continue to speak across centuries and cultures. They are precisely the kinds of images with which we most need to reconnect. I will never have been able to explore this understanding without returning to the dream and considering its anthropological dimension. And I'm deeply grateful to the anthropology of dreaming because it helps me understand how I can play a different role within society and become an active participant in cultural transformation. So this is a small story that came to me through dreams, and I'm very great to be part of it.
I love these dreams, and of course they can be waking dreams in the sense of synchronicity, in which the archetypal, the mythic themes, the great goddess or whatever turn up in the supermarket or on the street corner. As I listen to you, I was remembering a very simple dream of my own, which I'm standing on the street corner of in the city where I live, on the street where I live. It seems completely realistic in the dream. And everybody's waiting because Thor, the god Thor, is standing on the other side, on the other corner of the street. And he's really there. I came out of the dream thinking, well, this is great. I mean, they're with us. They're not in a separate reality at all, really. You talked a little bit about the state of anthropology. Let me say a little bit from my point of view. I'm not a trained anthropologist, but I know some anthropologists in different countries, especially British and American and Canadian, of course. And I have, I've read a lot of others. I've read a lot of the French anthropologists. And in my thinking about anthropology, I often think that the very first anthropologists who could be called by that word were actually the Catholic missionaries back in the 17th century in Brazil and in North America, the Jesuits in particular, who, of course, were carrying a religious ideology which condemned the practices of the natives that they visited, but nonetheless were often relatively accurate observers and brought us accounts of, in particular, from my point of view, the shamanic dream practices of these early people. Then you come to England in the Victorian era, and you have Sir Edward Tyler, who you know about, who published Primitive Culture in 1871, which probably very few anthropologists today would admit to reading, but he gave us the theory of animism, and he also gave us the hypothesis that the human belief in the soul, and therefore in the afterlife, the human belief in a soul that can travel outside the body and will therefore survive death, came from the dreams of what he called savage peoples, early peoples, so-called primitive peoples. He used the language of his time. It's very offensive to us today, but nonetheless, these two hypotheses that nature is alive and conscious and full of spirits, which is animism, and that dreaming is a matter of events in the life of the soul, not just symbolism, but dreams might be events in which soul, some aspect of the self, is traveling beyond the body or being visited by things that come from beyond the body. These are very important in the history of human thought, and I don't know to what extent in the discipline of anthropology as you experience it, these ideas have currency today. There is, I've noticed, something called the new animism, represented by people like Tim Ingold in England. And then there is what I find very interesting. There is the participatory approach to anthropology, by which the anthropologist is supposed not just to listen to informants and interlocutors, but to get into it, to share their own dreams with the people they're studying, whether these are indigenous people or people in Naples or whatever they are. The anthropologist is supposed to not be standing apart but sharing dreams. And the thing that happens with that, I have noticed, particularly when the anthropologist is in a profoundly different culture, like the culture of the Denisar, Athapascan Indians in Canada, for example, a French anthropologist called Goulet has lived with them. They go native in the sense that they're dreaming into the dream realities of the people they are studying. So the quality of their own dreams and the geography of their own dreams is changing. Now, this might be a minority, a niche within the broader field of anthropology, but I find it very interesting that some anthropologists have boldly gone in that experiential direction. And I know that whoever and whatever you're studying, you're likely to be not a stranger to an experiential participatory approach.
Yes, absolutely. I love, for example, the approach of Edith Turner that, as you wrote sometimes in Facebook, you described her and some other anthropologists like Michael Jackson, like anthropologists that broke the glass. And I love this expression because I feel I could fit in it because I feel I'm not those kind of anthropologists that used to put layers on layers on layer of interpretation, but I would love more and more as I go deeply inside the dream world to feel all the web of life that is really interwoven inside all the people, as you said, that are part of nature. And I live only a few minutes away from vast forests that remain largely unexplored. The region where I live is not specifically touristic. There are well-known trails, but there are also many places that remain untouched and rarely visited. there are places where one can genuinely feel the presence of nature, and perhaps the presence of the fairies as well. Here in my place where I live, there are a lot of legends and folklore around fairy people that are like our ancestors, like people of the mountains, people of the forests. So in my process of growing up 40 in all these years of studying, I started to trace a lot of legends, and I love spending time near mountain streams. There are three of them close to where I live. The water is icy cold, and yet I find it deeply restorative. And I also love the sea, but there is something about the water of the streams that renews me in a unique way. I love streams, and I also love them probably because I know that in the Celtic tradition, streams of water are connected with dream portals. And I have always felt that these landscapes helped me remember what it means to dream beneath layers upon layers of memory. That is different to put layers on layers. It's like unveil the layers of the memory, the big memory, as William Butler Yeats used to speak. They help me remember who I am. Being in nature is a continual process of anamnesis, a continual remembering of who I am as a human being and what contribution I can make to the earth. Remembering for me is not only about remembering my soul, it is also about remembering that I am part of a vast living fabric and that my action contributed to shaping the world we inhabit. It's a sort of team-ingled, embodied philosophy, but it was something that I felt a lot before reading team-ingled. I think that team-ingled is using a new language that could help people from the Occidental people or globalization society, the globalization society, to understand what kind of philosophy and dream practices native people has and had. So
it's beautiful. It's beautiful, Alberto. And I should tell people that you can understand now why one of Alberto's books is called Sogno della Terra, The Song of the Earth. He's a singer for the earth. So here we have an anthropologist who is very well educated, very literate, very cognitive brain, who's also a romantic and an animist in the sense that he dreams with the fairies and meets them when he walks by the mountains or by the streams. I feel, Alberto, if you and I were walking together in one of these landscapes, we would be a little bit like the poet Yeats and his friend, the poet and painter A.E. George Russell, who used to tramp around the west of Ireland, open to finding ghosts, spirits, and fairies everywhere. A.E., who painted them, he's a very good painter. A.E., who painted the tree spirits, the dryads and the hamadryads and other things, he said, all these spirits, it's a funny thing, all these spirits look rather human when you see them. They don't look human to ordinary sight, but they look rather human when you see them. Well, that might have been just their perspective. I mean, actually, I guess our expectation. We see things according to how we can perceive or imagine them. But I can imagine you and me tramping around in one of the landscapes you described and perhaps not competing with each other, but comparing how we sense and see these beings that are of nature. And in some ways, the Germans call them intermediary beings, Zwischenwesen. They're intermediary in the sense that they're between humans and the divine, the big divine, the big deity. These include nature spirits, fairies, huldufolk, the Icelanders call them, and many tribes. And the ability to see them and interact with them is one, as you know, which is prized in indigenous societies and in some ancient societies, and not looked upon with great sympathy in academia or by the people the British call the talking classes these days. But, you know, ordinary folk are still interested, ordinary
like to know these things, the love stories about it. And it all revives in our popular culture. What is lacking from academia and from maybe respectable seminars and discussion is all over the place when you look at what's going on in television, in popular fantasy novels and all the rest of it. The fairies, the gods, and the intermediary beings are very much alive in the entertainment culture, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. Intermediate people are very much alive. And I think that we need to nurture the connection with them, to co-create with them, to restore the fabric of relations. I think that with the pandemic we had a lot of isolation cases and people started to feel more alone. And I think that now dreamers need to work to help people to reconnect more, help people to reconnect to nature, to their true nature. To
yes, that's a great incentive, a great encouragement to us to go forward in the direction of reconnecting with a world of beings beyond human who are all alive and conscious and spirited. As a great American anthropologist, Pete Halliwell, A. Irving Halliwell, who worked with the Ojibwe Indians, tried to teach us. We're talking with a wonderful guest, Dr. Alberto Fragasso, an anthropologist of dreams. We'll be back for more after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world. And now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
We're talking to Dr. Alberto Fragasso, an Italian anthropologist of dreams. There are such wonderful beings, and we need them. We need to learn from them, and we need to feed them with our enthusiasm and our dreams. Alberto is a prolific author, a gifted teacher, and a prolific dreamer. And I'd love you, Alberto, to share some more about your own dream life and how it influences and guides your waking life, and how we can learn from this.
Thank you, Robert. I got a beautiful story. I received some years ago a beautiful dream about a school of children, and I decided after a summer project with children to follow this dream, and I created this homeschooling experience that has a life of 4 years and dissolved during the pandemic, probably because it was good. But I want to show you a beautiful thing, because years ago, as I said, I co-created an homeschooling community with 22 children, and at the center of our work was dreaming. Every morning we gathered in a circle and asked the children about their dreams. Sometimes we played the drum. Sometimes we guided them through meditation practices that helped them listen more deeply to themselves and explore the territory of their daimon. And this story is also connected to anamnesis. From the point of view of their daimon, we tried to develop the learning experiences based upon their unique gifts and potentials. And those 4 years were incredibly intense because we worked not only with the children but also with their families. And the process of anamnesis, of remembering, ring can be challenging. I discovered that sometimes it requires profound inner work, and remembering alone is not enough, because sometimes people have a strong rational mind can become, and this rational mind can become itself a trickster, leading us away from the desire of desires of our heart, as the Iroquois tradition teaches, the way of dreaming, of their way of dreaming. And for this reason, entering into relationship with nature, with the spirits of the place, and with the genius of Lochi is, for me, another way of remembering. And as I said before, the anthropology and the archaeology of dreaming are essential tools for remembering that we belong to a much larger people, the people of nature and all of sentient being. And the dreaming offers a path into this relation, one that is available to everyone. And once you cross that threshold, you discover that you are holding something precious in your hands, and then the question becomes, what will you do with that gift, with those kind of gifts? When I think about remembering, I also think about the action I wish to take and the legacy I hope to leave behind. Dreaming for me is also a practice of becoming a good ancestor for the future. Also, if I'm just 40, but I want to learn, in the sense of anamnesis, how to be a better human. And the dream ways I feel, and not just think, I feel by the field of my heart, that is the true way to do it. And I'm excited to be here in this moment in the earth, and I'm happy that my soul decided to to be here, to practice and...
There is such joy in you when you talk about these things that you love, that engage you so deeply, and we feel that. And you're using one of my favorite words, anamnesis. I'll just briefly remind listeners, or tell them for the first time probably, what it means to me. You know the story, I think. When I was a teenager, I think I was 14, I received a visit in that liminal state between sleep and awake, that hypnagogic state which sleep researchers don't talk about enough, which is such a lovely place to have encounters with other intelligences and embark on lucid dreaming. So there I am, I'm floating between sleep and awake, and a beautiful, radiant boy man, maybe 19 in appearance, appears to me, and I know he's come from the eastern edge of the Mediterranean, somewhere like Syria or Lebanon today, but he's Greek, he's Hellenic. And he talks to me using some Greek language. I mean, anamnesis is in English, it's in Italian, it's used by psychologists, I know, but I didn't know what it meant at the time. But he told me that it's all about anamnesis, and he said, you know, everything important, all the knowledge that matters to you will come through anamnesis. So then I had to research at age 14, and I discovered, of course, anamnesis means remembering, but in the school of Plato, in the Platonic school, it has a very specific message. It means remembering what you know on the level of higher mind, on the level of nous, on the level of higher mind, and including remembering, you know, who you were before you came here. And if you go to Pythagoras, then you're supposed to remember a whole chain of past incarnations and so on. So it's about remembering a lot more than you can know in the ordinary mind, and it's about overcoming the influence of Lethe. Lethe is the river or waters of forgetfulness that every human goes through
on the way to taking up full residence in a physical body. I mean, forgetfulness is part of our human condition. Very few souls get through from wherever we come from with anything like a complete memory, and nothing near a complete memory of who we were before. So anamnesis is, in Platonic terms, the remembering of who you are on the level of higher mind or higher spirit. And as you're telling us, I mean, dreaming is probably the most accessible way to do this on a daily basis in an ordinary life in our society. It also means that everybody has some degree of access to the practice of remembering. I mean, not everybody is going to be an Olympic-level dreamer, just as not everybody is going to be Olympic-level gymnast. But we all have a chance. We all have a start here, which is one of the things that I love about dreaming as a practice we can promulgate and bring to people. I mean, everybody has an opportunity to participate if they're willing to do so.
Yes, and about remembering, I've got another beautiful story that is connected to dreaming, if you want to listen about it, Robert.
I want to hear it. I'm not sure where we are in terms of the time. Maybe we should save it until the start of the next segment, because, yes, we're going to take a break very soon. So let's start so we don't have to interrupt you after the break. Once again, we're talking to Dr. Alberto Fragasso. Isn't he a fantastic guest? And he does so much in these areas, and he is, like all good teachers, a perennial student, always seeking to expand his range of resources, contacts, experiences, reading. Alberto, it's great to have you on, and we'll be back to hear more from you after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
We're back with Dr. Alberto Fragasso talking about the life of a dream anthropologist, the anthropology of dreams, anamnesis, remembering what the mind or spirit wants us to know. Alberto, you of course have a story relevant to this. Go right ahead.
Yes, I've got another story that is connected to anamnesis, and I love this kind of purpose that the Dreamways help me to discover more and more, because I feel really connected to my Greek ancestors and anamnesis and Neoplatonism in a sort of way. And this is a different kind of remembering, these stories. Yes, it's anamnesis, but also another kind of remembering, because I forgot something and somebody in the story helped me to remember. Usually someone tells that me that dreaming is useless. I feel genuinely saddened about it. We are often caught in a collective hallucination while lived experience and indigenous wisdom point towards something very different. And in this story is about me and my father, and I'm sitting in a classroom of the family nursing master's program at the University of Turin's School of Medicine as an anthropologist, medical anthropologist, and waiting for the student to arrive. And the topic was the anthropology of dreaming in practice. I took inspiration from one of your books, because I wasn't your student in that moment, and what might be called art-centered medicine from an indigenous perspective. And after a brief introduction, I divided the class into pairs and guided the students into a receptive state of consciousness. I then invited them to open themselves to the possibility of receiving impression, perception, and vision related to the areas of the body where their partners felt blocked or in need of attention. And with my drama as an ally, many of them began receiving images and scenes. Some even received vivid memories. And the art of dreaming as a way of bringing important things to the surface. In fact, one student shared that she had seen a vision of someone dying in an helicopter crash. Though she had no idea why such an image had appeared in the vision, and her partner immediately burst into tears. Her uncle, in fact, had died in that way. And the moment opened a profound conversation about healing, care, and health. It affected the group so deeply that another student confessed he was beginning to wonder whether he had chosen to right course of study. And sometimes it can be unsettling to recognize that the Western worldview is not the only way of understanding reality. And years later, I found myself, unfortunately, in the intensive care unity of the hospital of Aosta, that is a region near Turin, in the north of Italy, because my father had been admitted after a serious motorcycle accident. And a kind nurse welcomed me and asked whether I was that fragasso. And in my state of confusion, I didn't understand what she meant. And she reminded me she was the student who had received the helicopter vision years earlier. And now she was helping care for my father. And moments like this remind us, I think, and I feel profoundly, how intricately our lives are woven together, and how there may be an unseen undergrowth or forces quietly supporting us along the way. And the dreamers know that the dreaming is not an abstraction, is not an escapism, is not fantasy, but dreaming is alive.
It is interesting how we are all interconnected, how it weaves together, how dreams and synchronicity interweave, how we can meet each other in non-ordinary states of consciousness. And that's why I think the phenomenon of, let us say, mutual lucid dreaming, that's the language that's being used in the United States anyway, is so very interesting because it confirms that there are realities beyond the physical and we can meet them. And so I'm always fascinated by examples of how a mind reaches to another mind, and then, of course, how the mind can also interweave with physical reality, and mind and matter interfuse and change each other. We had an amusing episode this week involving you and me, and I won't give the context to people because it was a special kind of class and a special kind of program, but we had an episode which, let's say, during a night dream, I found myself looking through an old-fashioned ViewMaster, which is a gadget some people will remember. I think they're still making them, actually, but I remember it from my boyhood, where it was something that looks perhaps like a pair of binoculars, short binoculars you put up to your eyes, and then you move something, and something like a film clip moves in front of your eyes. And in my dream, I'm given something like this by a woman who's both a priestess and a librarian, and I'm looking through it, and I'm seeing ancient scenes. I'm looking across time. It's an interesting scene in a dream. And Alberto tells me that in the same night, he saw me looking through a pair of binoculars. He had no idea what I was doing. It had nothing to do with any assignment we had set in any formal way. And then it's followed up by synchronicity. The following day, someone else who's part of the same class is walking the streets of a city in the west of the United States with his child, and somebody hands him a ViewMaster, the same kind of thing I was looking through in my dream. And he looks at it in order to show him what the city looked like in earlier historical eras. It's part of some kind of very clever, very civilized kind of tourist reception. Come and see what the city looked like 100 years ago. Look through the ViewMaster. So there we are, three episodes, dreams that overlap, in which one cannot help but feel that one dream, in this case Alberto, managed to pick up something another dreamer was doing. And then synchronicity comes into play, and it's as if the dream spills into waking life. And I'm remembering as I talk about this, something Jung said at a seminar in Zurich back in the 1930s, when dreams and synchronicity were multiplying like this. So the dreams and synchronicity around the Zurich seminar involved the bull. The bull is a sacred animal. And they multiplied to such an extent that Jung said to his seminar group, you see, the dream is an animal. It's an animal. It's out there in the world. It's putting out feelers, putting out extra limbs as we're speaking. It's out there in the world. The dream is a living animal putting out multiple feelers. And so here we are, you know, the autonomy of dreams, the autonomy at play in synchronicity, and the interconnectedness at the same time of people who are involved in these things. And, of course, to the extent that we're engaged with each other with a common purpose, a common course of study, a common objective, that's our shared experiences are going to multiply too, and they're going to give us confirmation of, as I say, the reality, that the physical reality where we stub our toe or discuss having grapefruit for breakfast is not the only reality there is. All right, we are about to take another break. I want to turn Alberto Fragasso, isn't he entertaining and educational? I'm going to turn Alberto free for a while again to talk to us about whatever he likes, because he is so worth listening to and learning from. All right, you're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. We'll be back for our last full segment after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
All right, we have Alberto Fragasso, and he wants to tell us a dream of fairies, dreaming with the fairies. So get ready for your wings to start fluttering. You're on, Alberto.
I decided to title this dream, Dreaming About Fairies and My People. And this dream is important because it's the one that led me to write to you, Robert, a lot of years ago for the first time, several years ago. I think it was 25, so it's a lot of years. In the dream, I was walking near one of the streams in the area where I live. I was strolling along the bank, and not far away there was a winding road with a car carrying some old friends with whom I've since lost touch. And in the dream I said that spending too much time with them kept me distant from my true people, who I knew to be the fairies. And I also had a very strong feeling that the dreamers carried the fairy blood. So I wrote to you. And I'm deeply fascinated by Caitlin Matthews' book Celtic Seership, as well as by everything connected to the fairy world in the tradition of Robert Kirk. You quoted, by the way, in an article on your Substack some days ago. That's also why I love dreaming in nature so much. And this connects beautifully with another dream I had when I was 15. And on the main road of the town where I live, there was a small flowing stream, again, that emerged from a rift between worlds, through which a caravan of spirits passed, beings who were half human and half animal, along with horsemen, ladies, and carriages. It was a procession of spirits and fairies moving toward the town center. I knew that this opening between the worlds had appeared, and so I walked toward a small path where I encountered a deer, beautiful deer, curled up and resting, waiting for me near the entrance to a forest. So it was a very beautiful dream, and it's a sort of echoing dream, or something that maybe helps me to remember a dream of an amnesis connected to the genius logic. I don't know. What's your, what do you think about, Robert?
Well, I was excited when you mentioned the deer just now, because in Scotland, which is where Robert Kirk, who you quoted, had his encounters with the fairies and the elves and the hidden folk, which he called the secret commonwealth, the red deer are called the fairy cattle. And if you want to ride, I mean, you might choose a deer rather than a horse, although, of course, in the wild hunt, the fairies go riding on the horses as well. Well, I think from my experience, and I've had some, and, of course, you know, we all come from all over the place, but I have a certain amount of Celtic ancestry, as well as a certain amount of Scandinavian ancestry and a certain amount of human and animal ancestry, too, as we all do. I mean, we are within range. All of us are within range of many species other than human, whose attitude towards us varies. In one of the Puranas, in one of the Hindu scriptures, they say there are 40,000 species, humanoid in appearance, within range of human beings. 40,000. I don't think I can keep up with that. I mean, India, the mind of India, as you know, I mean, multiplies things to such an extent that if you start talking and thinking about many worlds and parallel lives and different dimensions and different species of beings, you get dizzy. I mean, there's so much going on. So you are one of those, from an indigenous viewpoint, from a dreamer's viewpoint, who is naturally connected, you know, probably from birth. I mean, as I say, we're not all Olympic dreamers, just as we're not all Olympic skiers. Everybody has some access to all of this, and they can learn to do more. And there are also people who are born to it. And it might be a question of, you know, a role that you chose, or I chose, or any of us choose before we come here. Thinking about anamnesis, I have to share a personal anecdote with you, which I think you've heard from me elsewhere, but I don't think I've ever told on this show. When I was going through the time of the confrontation with the unconscious, that Jung called it, in the midst of my life, middle of my life, living on a farm, he answered the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there in bright moonlight I see a pleasant-looking but rather simple-looking man. And he says, I come from my father's house. I think that's a strange way to announce yourself in the middle of the night. Is he a Jehovah's Witness, someone peddling religion? He says, after a brief exchange, what is your contract with God? And I wake up. It wasn't a lucid dream. I didn't know I was dreaming until that moment. I thought I was at the door. And I was at the door. I really was at the door. And although it's not exactly my language, I mean, it really hit me hard. I mean, if a stranger asks me, who seems connected, though, if a stranger who's somehow connected asks me if I have a contract with God, well, then perhaps I do have something like that. And if I do, how could I forget? So for a while, part of my inquiry in life, my inquiry into my life, my inquiry as to why I'm having this life, was to try and remember experientially, by shamanic journeying, by meditation and other ways, what the contract might be. What I found was sometimes very disheartening, because I found, for example, that my contract said I was supposed to publish 68 books. And even today, Alberto, I'm only up to 26, and I don't think I have time or energy to do the rest, but perhaps I'll be forgiven that. So we come back, we circle back round to the theme of anamnesis. And the other theme that we are talking about is the fact that there are worlds beyond the obvious one, right next to us. And they might be actually concealed within the obvious one. And there might ultimately be no difference except a difference of perception, a difference of energy level, a difference of resonance. So the other world opens from wherever we are, and it seems to open quite easily for you in dreams and in waking experiences, and it opened quite easily in their places where places are thin. You know that phrase, the thin places, the places where the distance, the dimension, the thickness of the separation between one world and another seems to be much, much thinner, much, much more evanescent, much frailer. When I was sleeping in Sligo, the Sligo William Butler Yeats, where he spent his adolescence and where he is buried, or his supposed remains are buried, under Ben Bulbin, a bear mountain. I met people that you would call fairies or she. The encounter wasn't altogether warm and cordial and straightforward. I mean, the hidden folk are not necessarily always going to be friendly or welcoming to regular humans. But some of us discover we have something in common. And then they say in Scotland, you know, Alberto, listen to this. If you've been close to the fairies, then you must always spend time in the vicinity and eat a little fairy food, or else you'll always be hungry. How about that? Eat a little fairy food. And then through your way of life. Well, I've been rambling a bit, but I hope in a way that is entertaining. Alberto's not been rambling. He's been talking to us in a way which is both entertaining, instructive, and inspiring. Alberto Fragasso will put his... we'll ask him for his website when we come back to say thank you and farewell. And we'll put it up at my website when we put up a proper announcement of this conversation. You listen to Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. We'll be back briefly after this break.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Well, I just simply grazie to Dr. Alberto Fragasso. What a fantastic conversation. Alberto, what is your website? People are going to want to find you.
My website is dreamwisdom.com.
All right, that's easy, dreamwisdom.com. Alberto, may your best dreams come true, and thank you so much for sharing your adventures amongst fairies, anthropologists, and so much more.
Thank you. It was so beautiful. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Robert, for the invitation. And thank you, all the listeners. See you in the dream time.
All right. To everyone, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.